seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome to Golf Weekly. Should have been easy this week. We should have been watching the Century in Kapalua, the Winners' Party, Golf in Paradise, visions of Hawaii, sun, surf, lots of birdies. But instead, there's no tournament. So the biggest action took place in the boardrooms, and it's fairly seismic. The PGA Tour has just opened the door for Brooks Koepka to come back, but on very specific tour control terms. There's a new returning member program that includes equity penalties, fines, deadlines, and a whole lot of private equity influence that's, we think, is going to shape the future of the sport. To make sense of it all and all everything else that's happening in golf, I'm joined by two of the best in the game, our own Gary Murphy and one of golf's sharpest writers and observers, John Hogan. Lads, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Fionn.
Nice to be here.
John, were you surprised by yesterday's news that Brooks, prodigal again, the arms were open, come back to the fold, son, all is forgiven?
Well, I'm not surprised that it's him. I mean, Koepka has always been, at least from a distance, the most reluctant of the big names who went to LIV. I mean, back in the, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when he had a pretty severe knee injury, and that was all, the story was always that was the reason why he'd gone, because he didn't think he was ever going to be the player that he'd been before the injury. So he kind of took the money and not ran, because he couldn't. He probably limped off with all the money now. But he's made a full recovery, I think probably to his surprise. So the temptation was always going to be there for him to come back. I mean, he was the one, if you watch these guys, the LIV guys that playing in, you know, European Tour events or Asian Tour events, they all wear their LIV golf gear. But Koepka never did. He always wore his own stuff. So there was always a distance between him and LIV, that even although he'd taken the money and gone and played there, he never looked very happy. So no, I'm not surprised that, given, you know, that if somebody was going to come back, it was always going to be him first.
Mm. Gary, he never looked very happy on the PGA Tour before he went, but to John's point. So let's see, the terms of his readmission include a $5 million fine or contribution to charity. He forfeits player equity program eligibility for 5 years. I'm going to talk about that has changed dramatically in the last few days as well. And he has limited tournament access at the start, so he can't just show up wherever he likes. And that Brian Rolapp, the PGA Tour CEO, has reassured existing members that the fields are going to be expanded, so returning players, plural, don't take spots from existing members. What do you think of all of that?
It seems that whilst he's back, he's kind of, I wouldn't say behind the eight ball, but it doesn't look like he's going to be able to just, you know, smooth on back in and pick and choose. So I don't know if it sounds like it's the best deal ever for Koepka. It's probably the best deal because he doesn't want to play on LIV anymore. But it seems quite restricted. And then if he does play particularly well, it's going to cost him a fortune in money, because he's not going to, you know, it's probably going to, like, let's say hypothetically he got back out there and won the FedEx. It's probably going to cost him nearly what, if the numbers are true, what he got to go to LIV. So he's kind of, I wouldn't say back to ground zero, but because obviously the money's accruing a little bit of interest along the way. But it does sound like the PGA Tour kind of, you know, play their cards pretty strong here. You can come back, but there's a lot of, you know, and even Torrey Pines is a strange place to start back. Like, that's a tough week. I thought maybe the American Express might have been a softer, because there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. I know he kind of rises to that and needs it at times, but yeah, it does seem like he's back on the PGA Tour, but it seems like the PGA Tour have kind of won his return, so to speak.
Yeah, this might seem a little bit ironic, given that he took the money from LIV and went there, But Kepka was always a little bit different, Gary, wasn't he? I mean, he was driven by the majors. Even when he was playing the PGA Tour back in the day, you know, the run-of-the-mill PGA Tour events didn't seem to interest him that much. He got up for the majors, but a run-of-the-mill event was never quite the same for him.
Mm. I can probably see him giving it a lash for 5 years and stopping a bit sooner. You know, I don't see him... Now, I know they all say this and they end up doing it, but I don't see him competing much into his late 40s or interest in Champions Tour, maybe. So maybe he's probably sees a 3 or 4 year window to try add, you know, if he can get to 6 or 7 majors, that's the kind of best player of his generation, current generation. So maybe that's his only focus and he's going to play a bit in the PGA Tour, play a few bigger events in Europe maybe and fill his schedule that way. You know, maybe do a couple of weeks in Europe prior to the Open or, you know, is he, because can he get in the Scottish Open? You know, he's going to need an invite for that.
He will.
He's not really going to get in on category because that's technically a signature event. So
according to the terms of his readmission, he can't benefit from sponsors' invites to signature events. He has access to full field events. And to John's point, there's something ironic about that. For a guy who really didn't seem to care a jot about ordinary PGA Tour events, these are the ones, these will be his bread and butter to earn full readmission. Now, I want to ask you both about this because all of the terms of this were laid out in this letter that Brian Rolapp wrote to members. And whilst some critics have said, you know, this is clear evidence that they're just making it up as they go along. One of you said it. It was like, it's a very, very clever bit of work. So I'm looking, I've kind of, it seems that the tour is trying to do 4 things all at once. Obviously, bring the stars back. And because this is an elite, because of the exemption or the readmission program is open only to those who've won a major in the last few years. So basically, it's 4 people, 4 players. It's Brooks, John Rahm, Cam Smith and Bryson. Everyone else is not part of this deal. So that's one. The PGA Tour is looking to try and save face. So clearly show that LIV didn't win. It wants to protect its current members so it doesn't result in a mutiny. And it wants to create leverage so to kind of future defections are completely discouraged. John, do you think it accomplishes that?
I think as you say, I think it's a very clever move. And I don't think this is something that they've come up with overnight. This has been in the works for a while. I mean, there's so much detail that you touched on there. They've kind of covered every base. They had to keep the rank and file membership happy. The likes of Kepka couldn't just waltz straight back in with no penalty and play whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. That was never going to happen. So there was that side of it. But I tell you, I mean, this is a big deal, but I think this is a real crossroads with the potential for, you know, seismic implications. I mean, I'm far more interested. I mean, I'm interested that Brooks Kepka has come back, but I'm far more interested in the next 2 weeks when the other 3 guys have got a choice to make, and especially one in particular, DeChambeau. I mean, he's the one that the PGA Tour would die to have back on their schedule. I don't think they would care 2 hoots about Cam Smith.
I don't think Cam Smith cares 2 hoots about going back. Well, he certainly doesn't give that impression.
Possibly not.
Yeah,
absolutely. He's gone. I mean, the 3 we've just met, I mean, DeChambeau's kind of maintained his level. I mean, he's won the US Open since he went to LIV, etc. But the other two, I mean, Rahm has gone backwards, and so has, and Cam Smith particularly, is a shadow of the player that he was when he won the Open at St Andrews. So but I think the really interesting thing for me the next 2 weeks is, what does Bryson DeChambeau do? That's what I would like. I'm dying to know what he's going to do.
Gary, let's look at that, because, I mean, I don't know what you think, but I would think John Purley has it spot on. I think Rahm has gone backwards. Cam Smith seems, I won't say disinterested, but certainly a shadow of the player that won the Open and did so well in the Masters. Was it the Masters? Before he went to LIV, he performed brilliantly there. What do you like? I mean, obviously you don't have Bryson's ear, but like, what do you think?
I think Cam Smith's only halfway through contract. He kind of reached his Everest, it seems, at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
You know, backing up of players. He's an unbelievably good golfer, but is he or was he ever going to be a player that was going to be, you know, in the top five in the world rankings for a 10, 12-year period? Probably not. There's no way. It seems even Koepka, he's obviously given money back to not do his final year. So it's probably costing Koepka a lot of dough. John Rahm seemed like he was going to be a top five player in the world for 10, 15 years. He's slightly lost his way, but he got allegedly $400 million. So if he cuts out 2 years, like, he's not handing back a couple of $100 million to go back and play on the PGA Tour. I mean, that's insane to do that. The Shamble one is different because his contract is almost up. So it wouldn't cost him as much. And he's the big target. Like, Cam Smith is not a big target, I wouldn't imagine, for, you know, there's five or six young fellas coming through that are probably Americans too. They're probably still in college at the moment. So whilst Cam Smith's a great golfer, I'm not knocking him for that. He's not really a headline act, whereas DeChambeau is the kind of prize pony at the moment. And the fact that his contract is nearly run down, he would be... It nearly seems like it's Bryson DeChambeau or DeChambeau clause to get yeah. him back on the PGA Tour. Fascinating.
It's worth pointing out, in case you didn't know, that the deadline for application to this readmission program is the 2nd of February. And that's all important because, John, as you said, you know, they've 3 weeks in which to make their minds up. But let's game it out here a little bit. Let's just say that Bryson, who I'm sure his people know that his contract being up, that he is in a very strong position to leverage live for, you know, 500 million, a billion, whatever. Yeah, I don't know, like a huge astronomical amount of money. John Rahm, as Gary points out, is still got 2 years left. So a jump for him could be financially quite penalizing. I mean, I don't know that, like, in the end, it'll really make a difference to his bank balance ultimately and his ability to live the life of the ultra privileged. But let's say that the two of them just stay put. So, and then the deadline passes, Brooks return, like, ultimately, what does that mean, you know, other than just that Brooks has come back?
Excuse me. Not that much.
Yeah.
You know, given the fact that Brooks, as you said, I mean, Ram's gone backwards, Smith's certainly gone backwards, Koepka's gone backwards too. I mean, he missed three cuts out of the four majors last year. That's not the form of somebody that was, you know, he was a dominant figure, lest we forget, prior to Scotty Scheffler's coming. Koepka was the big dog at every major. He was the man to beat for two or three years there, and he won five of them, which is in a very short space of time, which is very difficult to do.
Yeah.
So you're right. I think his impact, his coming back doesn't have the impact it would have had 5 years ago. You know, because he's not the player that he was. I mean, it's just as simple. I mean, the numbers are there. That's what it comes down to in the end. I mean, what are you going to deliver? And he's a long way from being the player that won the five majors right now. He's stuck. I mean, as you say, he's not making cuts in majors. That's a long way from winning.
And Gary, but let's conversely play out this scenario. So John Rahm decides, you know what? Because John Rahm, clearly, certainly, if you're reading the tea leaves, really kind of, he had buyer's remorse, or seems to have buyer's remorse, and wants to come back. So let's say he jumps and he comes back, he takes the money, bites the bullet, surrenders, whatever, half his contract, which leaves Bryson. But all of a sudden, Bryson becomes a very vulnerable player, because even though he is the one bona fide star left on live, like, what's he doing? He's playing like fun golf against DJ and Patrick Reed and Henrik Stenson. You know, it feels like he's not going to sharpen his competitive edge. So all of a sudden, Bryson becomes, like, you know, the biggest star, but in a pond full of, like, aging goldfish.
Yeah, the other thing as well is the appetite from Liv as well. Do they want to go back in again and spend a lot of money like they did initially. You know, is the budget there? Obviously, the budget's there, but is the willingness to...
Yeah. Just because you have the money doesn't mean you want to spend it, exactly.
No, and I don't think the project has really given them a return within reason. Obviously, they were never looking at making a profit initially, but... You know, the stock market's falling. Do you keep buying the dip, hoping that it's going to bounce? I'm not sure if that's their philosophy going forward. Judging even by the players they signed over the break, there's no A-listers. Now, the other side of
it is... You don't think Laurie Clark,
I'm
kidding.
Well, if Ram went back, he's going to have to give up, you know, hypothetically, a couple of hundred million. Maybe Bryson might think, well... That could be my 200 if I stay on, and maybe he's a little more financially driven than we perceive him to be, and the way his attitude about him and his game, the fact that he has won a major whilst playing on LIV, he might still, you know, because he's quite big into his YouTube stuff. Maybe he's enjoying life a little bit more than, and it hasn't really affected his game. So, I think. If I was to guess, one of them would go back. It'd be more Ram than Shambo.
I agree with you, but John, to the point I made, do you not think that if Bryson is the only star left at LIV, and look, I'm not disrespecting DJ, but these are guys on the way down, like these, and there's a reason why the terms of this deal deliberately exclude DJ, Mickelson, Patrick Reed. Henrik Stenson, all of whom have won majors, but not in the window of eligibility for this particular deal. So it's the PGA Tour going, guys, you were great once upon a time, but we don't need you, so goodbye. So yeah, that just leaves Bryson
right.
Playing against these guys.
Yeah, there's definitely some points being made by the PGA Tour in the detail of all this. I mean, if you're Tyrrell Hatton or Joachim Niemann right now, what are you thinking? Basically, the PGA Tour have said to them, well... You know, we don't really care whether you come back or not.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are half a step down from, you know, superstar level. I mean, especially Tyrrell, I think he's a terrific player. If I'm him, I'm feeling a bit sort of bruised this morning. Plus, the one that made me smile was, you know, the window of where you had to win your majors to have the opportunity to make this choice was from 2022 to 2025. And remarkably, Phil Mickelson won his last major in 2021. And nobody's criticised the PGA Tour more than Phil over the last few years. So there was definitely a point getting made there.
There's no doubt that was a dig at Mickelson.
Oh, definitely.
Brooks didn't join the lawsuit that the LIV players brought against the PGA Tour. So I'm sure all these factors played into smoothing Brooks's return. What ultimately, even just say if Brooks returning, what do you think it says, Gary, about LIV? Because if Koepka can come back to the tour, he can now prep for the majors at home, which means he doesn't have to fly overseas to play all the time, and it seems keep most of his LIV earnings. Does it kind of dent LIV's where the future pitch and kind of makes it more of a high paying detour rather than a permanent home?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things really. The PGA Tour's relationship with the European Tour.
Yeah.
That deal is up next year, or it's up for review next year. I think it's fascinating how that's going to play out. Because even if you look at the entry list this week on DP World, there's quite a few LIV players. There's even more at Dubai Desert Classic next week. Like Dustin Johnson is playing the Desert Classic next week. You know, Tom McKibben's in, Laurie Cantor is in. There seems to be, you know, no problem for the fines or the whatever court case or potential seems to have, that can has been kicked down the road. So even Tyrrell Hatton's playing next week. So from the rank and file LIV guys that can play in Europe, like they have the best of both worlds. They're playing for bananas money, and yet they can pick and choose, you know, the nice events they want to play on the DP World Tour. So I wonder what the PGA Tour think of that. You know, they're doing a deadline for really four players for the 2nd of February, and yet the DP World Tour are allowing, you know, these LIV guys to pitch up kind of whenever they want to. So I don't know how if that affects that relationship. Maybe then the angle is that the Saudis come in after the PGA Tour, if that deal does cease to exist.
John, yeah, I mean, Gary makes a great point there. I'm really interested in what happens at the end of the current deal between the PGA Tour and the European Tour. I mean, if I'm Mr. Liv, and especially now, given that if Kepka's gone, which Kepka is gone, let's say DeChambeau and Rahm go too, I'm left with this, you know, pretty mediocre product. It's not the greatest thing, and I've poured all this money into something that quite clearly is not working. I'm looking around for alternatives, and if the alternative is that the European Tour breaks away from the PGA Tour deal, gets into bed with Liv money, the Asian Tour, and every other tour that you care to mention, and builds a tour that goes everywhere in the world except America, that is a viable alternative to playing on the PGA Tour, especially for non-Americans. I mean, I lived in America for 8 years. It's not for everybody. It's a different culture. Mm. And there's plenty of guys, really good players, who've gone to America with games you think ideally suited to playing on the PGA Tour and haven't settled there because it's different. It's difficult. You're away from home. Nobody, and a lot of people don't want to stay in a Courtyard Marriott every week that looks the same as last week and same as next week.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. If I'm Mr. Liv, as I say, I'm thinking to myself, if I'm going to continue to invest, that seems to me like a far better product for me to invest in than the one I've got right now.
I couldn't agree
more. And it seems to me that I mean, Gary will confirm this, I'm sure, that there's a significant body of opinion on the European Tour among the players who think that they should have gone with the Saudis in the first place.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that how tough a sell that would be to the European players. Plus, and I'm really thinking out loud here, Rory McIlroy right now, if I'm Rory McIlroy, I mean, the PGA Tour threw him under the bus fairly recently. I'd be pretty pissed off if I was Rory with the PGA Tour. Plus, I've been on the PGA Tour for years. I've done everything on the PGA Tour you can possibly do multiple times. Rory, at this stage of his life, might be looking around for another challenge. And he keeps talking about, you know, national opens and things. Well, this new tour that I've envisaged would be replete with national open titles. That might be attractive to Rory. I don't know. I mean, I'm just, as I say, I'm thinking out loud. But if you had Rory as the spearhead for this new circuit that was everywhere except America, that's a pretty good product. I mean, I was at the Australian Open last month in Melbourne, excuse me, and I saw the effect that the Rory can have. I mean, the place was moving with people, especially kids. His influence, you'd never underestimate the influence that Rory's got right now. He's the guy.
Yeah,
that everybody wants to see, and if they had him, the PGA Tour would have something to have a real challenge on their hands.
I mean, certainly over the years, most of us on this podcast have made no secret of our belief that the future of golf we'd like to see is one where you have two self-sustaining, healthy, competing tours that allows for golf to be played globally. And John, as you said, so the likes of Australia all of a sudden can see top players play on a regular basis, so on and so forth. So let's imagine if I was indeed Mr. Liv, I would invest very, very heavily in the DP World Tour, which one, you're making the DP World Tour self-sustaining. I mean, you're tying it into a deal with PIF. Yeah. Fine, whatever. But like, I mean, just as, look, the PGA Tour owes $1.5 billion to that SSG consortium, and they have to pay it back. So everybody owes money to somebody. But at the same time, then what you're doing is you're also buying a bit of heritage. You're buying TV deals. You're accessing, you're basically, you're doing that thing that Liv, despite its best efforts, really hasn't been able to crack. And that's that kind of legitimacy and access to a wider audience. So it would absolutely make sense to me. Gary, as someone with strong connections to the European Tour, how would you feel if all of a sudden Liv became the primary investors and sugar daddies?
Well, if they throw a few quid at the Legends Tour, I'd be even happier. Yeah. But I think another point as well, which, because of this announcement, kind of seems to have gone unnoticed. Sky Sports are going to cover the live events this year.
Is it Sky Sports in the UK or Sky Sports in...
Well, it's
TNT.
Sky Sports Germany, isn't it, I think?
But oh, sorry, right. Okay, that's big news.
That's just in Germany, Gary. The TNT are going to cover live in the UK.
Oh, okay, but still, it's going to be on. It's going to be available on kind of. I was going to say regular television.
It's going to be more accessible than it's ever been.
Yeah.
But that's like the main media partner for the Europe TV partner for the European Tour, DP World Tour, Sky Sports. So that's another little tiny bit of synergy starting there. Sure. So, I don't know. I'm sure there's the conversations are going on as we speak about, you know, planning for what's coming up next. But if you think back to the 80s, when the Ryder Cup through Tony Jacklin really started to catch fire, 99% of it was because there was a rivalry between the PGA Tour and the European Tour. Now, I know the Ryder Cup last year was exciting, but these guys are all buddies nowadays because they all play in the same tour.
Yeah.
Where imagine what it would do for the Ryder Cup if there was down the road a break between Europe and America and there was two tours really competing against one another and then they came against one another every 2 years, because the Ryder Cup is the cash cow in all of this.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, that has to be maintained. And I think it would only add value to a Ryder Cup if the finances were there for the Europeans to go alone or get into bed with someone other than the PGA Tour.
Somewhere the ghost of Seve is breaking out into a broad smile, lads.
Yeah. Well, let me just throw this one in there. You mentioned the Ryder Cup. This is kind of an aside, but I mean, the Europeans have made it clear that they were quite happy to have John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton, live players, playing on their team for the last two matches. Henrik Stenson lost his job because he went with Liv. Things have changed. I mean, why? I'm thinking to myself, why can't Henrik Stenson be the next captain? Especially now that he's left Liv, he's back. Yeah. He's going to be back playing on the European Tour. Why? Yeah, sure. What is stopping Henrik Stenson from them giving the job to Henrik? You know, in view of the changing circumstances,
right? I tell you. So anyway, look, Brooks is going to tee it up at the Farmers Insurance Open, which is later this month. Someone who won't be playing is Hudson Swafford. I mean, obviously, he doesn't live in the elite company occupied by the likes of Brooks. But I bring it up because Hudson Swafford, who went to live and is now, according to himself, serving a 5-year ban from readmission to the PGA Tour, and that is because he played in 5 live events that competed with existing PGA Tour events. So he said he received these effective bans based on conflicting live events that then were stacked into kind of a multi-year penalty. So one rule is like, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. I mean, does it potentially, I mean, look, Hudson Swafford is not a name that really troubles most golf fans. But at the same time, does it open up a possibility for Hudson Swafford to take legal action against the PGA Tour? Because you can't make one rule for this guy and then just, and you know, and not make a different rule for me.
Well, if I was the PGA Tour, as you say, he's not the biggest name in the world. I'd just take a pragmatic view or maybe a cruel view and I'd say, all right, just lift the ban. Who cares whether he plays or not?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to make no difference to the PGA Tour whether Hudson Swafford is banned or not. I mean, you know, it's just not even going to be on their radar.
Okay.
I think maybe the technicality on that, he was probably still a member of the PGA Tour at the time. So he would have been, you know, because you need a release to play other tours. Whereas Koepka resigned. So that's probably a loophole for them. So he was in breach.
That sort of stuff has never bothered the PGA Tour, though, Gary. I mean, they managed to ban Laurie Cantor, who'd never even been a member of the PGA Tour at the time, you know.
I know guys, because I don't want to name names, but I know guys in seniors golf that wanted to go to Liv, to the qualifying school, and they're banned from playing the Champions Tour if they do that.
Mm. Yeah.
Just entering the Q school. So, you know, there's
Gary,
a lot of...
just go. What do you care?
Yeah, exactly.
What Brooks will not have access to, though, is this expanded player equity program for 5 years, which this week was expanded to include the top 50 in the FedEx Cup for recurring equity grants. And they're saying, I don't know, whatever the numbers are, like 50, 85 million, just lots and lots of money. And I mean, you can also disguise it as the Don't Go to Live Again program, if you want. But
you don't need to go to live.
Yeah, you know, you don't absolutely need to go to live because we're just going to flood you with money. But what it does, I mean, other than just make the top 50 guys richer again, John, does it transition? And maybe this is a more subtle point, but the tour from being a tour, which basically hosts events that people play, into a league. Because you have like the centralized system that's controlling equity. That's it feels more and more that the PGA Tour is becoming a PGA league.
And yeah, I mean, I always laugh, and I've said this before probably on here because I've said it a million times, but I always laugh when I hear that these supposed independent contractors, incredibly rich guy, individuals, blah, 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 they turn into a trade union at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, their attitude to live is the trade union is, you know, exclusionism in its most basic form. So, you know, they can't, they've always wanted it both ways. You know, it's probably becoming clear I'm not a huge fan of a lot of what the PGA Tour get up to. I mean, they're not interested really in what is absolutely the best thing for the game. I mean, I'm sure Gary would be the same. I mean, I've yearned for the world tour that we basically described, you know, a few minutes ago. I've yearned for that my whole career because as a golf fan, that's something that I would love to watch. You can imagine the great courses and the interesting places that they could go. The PGA Tour, a lot of weeks, is pretty boring.
Yeah,
I mean, there are exceptions. The golf courses are part of the equation. The golf course, the venue for tournaments doesn't get enough credit or discredit for whatever way you look at it, in my mind. I mean, a lot of the tournament courses in the PGA Tour are pretty bland. I mean, there are a few really good ones. They stand out, they stand out for a reason.
I think, John, we're kind of biased, but like if you looked at like the Spanish Open at Club de Campo last year, it was just amazing. Mm. You know, we were spoiled probably in the 80s and 90s with having, you know, Seve and Faldo and Langer and Lyle, you know, and Langer and all Woozy and all those stars. So you probably had 10 great players. And I would love to see, now I don't think it might ever happen, but, you know, Rory playing in the Dutch Open or the Italian Open, you know, and kind of, you know, because I would say Rory, he probably hasn't won enough European Tour events.
Mm.
Probably because he hasn't played in enough, but I still think he's nearly played in less events than I've played, you know, which is ridiculous. But and the order of merit is a big thing for him to get past Monty's record.
Yeah.
So like if you had, you know, you look at what John Rahm has done for the Spanish Open in the last 3 or 4 years, it's been amazing. So
but,
and there's a deep sense of history and tradition to watching those events.
Yeah, I tell you what would help even more, and this is, again, I apologise because I do bang on about this. The Australian Open last month, I mean, Rory, he kind of surprised people when, I mean, he whispered to me that he thought that the Royal Melbourne was overrated.
Well, he
hadn't played Royal Melbourne before.
Yeah.
And he thought Kingston Heath was better. Now, part of my thinking on that, part of the reason for that is that the game that Rory plays and the distance he hits it, the game that he plays is wholly unsuited to the subtlety and nuance that is the strength of Royal Melbourne. He's not seeing Royal Melbourne the way that it should be seen. And if he hauled the ball back 50 yards off the tee or whatever, he would have a far greater appreciation, as would everyone else, for the wonderful golf course that Royal Melbourne is.
That would help too.
I think if he played Royal Melbourne with the 2 iron off the tee, he'd see a completely different golf course.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's. I mean, I saw Tiger play there in the President's Cup in 2019, and he was 43 years old, I think, at the time, and past his best, not the player he was. But still, on that golf course, he was, Gary, he was miles better than everybody else on that golf course. It was an education to watch him play it. And it was just the best thing I've seen in years and years. Tiger Woods playing Royal Melbourne. I mean, he didn't get any better than that. He had all the different flights, he had different shapes, he had all the kind of the spins, all the stuff that separates, you know, the proper golf, if you like, from the crash bang wallop stuff that has become the norm at the elite level. I mean, it was just beautiful to watch.
They have to get the money up at the Australian Open in order to.
Yeah.
You know, $2 million Aussie dollars is a pittance really in today's market.
Yeah, they need to speak to the government too about the tax they take as well. I mean, it's a very high level of taxation on prize money.
That's Peter Lawrie's big bugbear, was always that the tax. Lads, can I bring you back for a second to just what's happening again with the PGA Tour and kind of play out a future where the likes of an Australian Open become very, very important if there is a secondary or a second tour that challenges the hegemony of the PGA Tour? Because, like, just looking here, you have... you can be cynical and we can all kind of pull our hair out and go, this is not golf that we knew, this is not the PGA Tour that we knew. But they're looking at the NFL, for instance, and where the league itself is the asset and the players have a direct share in its growth. And it seems that's what Brian Rollup and all the money guys of the PGA Tour and SSG, that's the future they envision. But part of that future is this lean 20-event season that starts later. Now, as I said at the beginning, we should really be talking about Kapalua. We should be talking about the Century Tournament of Champions. That was cancelled because of water issues and there's a fight in Hawaii, and that's fine. But I'm looking at Golf Digest report that there's the very distinct possibility that we will never see a Hawaiian swing again. Sony, their sponsorship finishes this year. And there was a statement from Kapalua say, the tour thanks Century, but doesn't acknowledge Hawaii at all, Maui, Kapalua. Century's talking about signature level events and the quality of competition, but it's talking about Century sponsoring a tournament, not necessarily the one in Hawaii. So is the reality that we're going to see 20 events played for like the top, whatever, 65, 75, 100 guys, whatever it is, and then everything else is just, you know, little better than the Challenge Tour?
Yeah, well, I do think that the early signs are that this Brian Rollup, the new head guy on the PGA Tour, I mean, he's a pretty smart cookie, clearly.
He is, yeah.
And one of the things I'm no great fan of the NFL. I never really took to it, but that's by the by. One of the things I really admired about the NFL was, as you just touched on there, was the short season, relatively short season in the NFL, which directly made every game, just about every game, a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are not many games in the NFL that mean nothing. You know, they pack them out every week for a start. That is, and you contrast that with the baseball in America, where there's 162 games, I think, regular season, where statistically, you know, an individual game means basically nothing. That to me is not the way that the and golf is leaning more towards baseball right now than it is the NFL. Yeah. And I think Rollup's influence is definitely going to be one to keep an eye on. And I do think a shorter season, I mean, it's not nothing new. I mean, we've banged on about that, I think, before, that there's too much golf. I mean, we need a break from it. Everybody needs a break. And we would be able to hopefully get rid of a lot of the mediocrity if the seasons were shorter.
But as I said, like I call it the Challenge Tour, but it really just becomes where all of these events that aren't signature events or that aren't in that 20 selected premium tournaments become part of the Corn Ferry Tour or a new Tier 2 version that sits somewhere between the PGA Tour and the Corn Ferry, where the likes of Hudson Swafford will be perfectly welcome to try and compete.
Yeah. Well, you can take the view that, I mean, look at the way that tennis runs. I mean, I'm not entirely familiar with it, but they have, you know, like 5,000 events, 4,000, 3,000, 1,000, I think they call them.
Yeah.
You know, the golf could be run in the same way, that the whatever level of player you are, there's somewhere for you to play somewhere in the world. Mm. you know, in a 1,000 event, on if you're a better player, you get to play in a 2,000 event, and the elite ones are, say, 5,000 events. That to me is the future. And it would mean promotion and relegation, you know, that would be a true meritocracy. I mean, that's what competitive sport is supposed to be. And that was one of the big criticisms of LIV, was that it wasn't a meritocracy. It was just a, you know, bit of fun.
But is the PGA, sorry, Gary, before you answer, to that very, very point, the way this equity program is being organized, is it kind of a slightly juiced meritocracy where the likes of Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth, within reason, can have fallow times but still be protected by status and all these weird kind of measures such as popularity, with the fans, et cetera, et cetera. So players like that can have like low periods and not be as impacted by the threat of relegation compared to, say, I don't know, a name that, you know, that maybe doesn't quite penetrate the public mind.
I think the marketability of the players is so different now to what it was 15, 20 years ago.
For sure.
You know, they have way more avenues of social media and YouTube to increase their exposure. And you can see that with certain players that are, you know, very, very popular on social media, but not necessarily the best player. Like Min Woo Lee be a good example. You know, a wonderful golfer, won on the PGA Tour. You know, but he's not really an A-lister. He's not a top five player in the world. Yet his reach through other avenues makes him a player that kind of everyone wants at their tournaments. So they've different ways now of becoming bigger and staying relevant as well. Even if they're golf, you know, it's not that they're not winning majors every year or whatever.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, maybe it is, you know, avenue for the Spieths or Thomas as if they fall off the grid a bit to stay in the grid as such.
Yeah, well, maybe this kind of runs against what I just said, but I mean, you get around that by just the system they have in play now where they have a couple of sponsors' invites.
Yeah.
For want of a better phrase.
I mean,
maybe you don't get rid of that just to cover the, as you say, the recognition of the way the modern world runs.
I mean, I'm with you, John. I think Rolap is clearly a very, very smart cookie and is making some very bold decisions that he believes will safeguard the health and future of the PGA Tour. But that notwithstanding, there's an awful lot of like the Wild West about this. Like some of the stuff they're just coming up with this is like, and even like, would any of us be surprised? Right now, they're saying Brooks can't benefit from the player equity program for the next 5 years. Would anybody be surprised if at the start of the 27 season they announced, well, Brooks Koepka can now benefit from the player equity program because, you know, X equals Y equals Z minus 2. You know, it's like it feels very much they will make whatever rules will suit their own bottom line. And look, that's... They've always done that. Yeah.
That's the way the PGA Tour has always been run.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The PGA Tour doesn't do anything, or historically has never done anything, that doesn't benefit in some way, shape or form the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I mean, the money that they're propping up the European Tour to a large extent financially, have done for the last few years. They only did that to keep the European Tour away from LIV. I mean, that was the only reason they did that. There would no other reason in the world would the PGA Tour ever give the European Tour money for apparently no reason. Mm.
But John, they get to cherry pick 10 players every season.
That too. That was just part of the deal. That was, yeah. I'm sure that was an add-on that they came up with once they started thinking about it. Yeah.
Lads, I'm conscious, John, that you don't have a huge amount of time at our disposal. So I just want to get on to talk about, there was the LIV qualifying event. And I think certainly in Irish golfing circles, we were all kind of fingers crossed for Max Kennedy, who unfortunately came up short. He shot a closing 76 at the LIV Golf Promotions event, which took place in Florida. Like he went into the final round three shots out of the top three. Gary started the day fairly strong, one under, tied six, 22-man field. And, you know, to earn one of these three LIV wildcards, but just wasn't to be.
The sliding doors of professional golf. He
Yeah.
had an opportunity to play for 25 million a week, and he's back on Challenge Tour playing for 250 grand. So,
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it got to him, but listen, I think he's making great strides so early in his career. So he can only use it as a positive and learn from it. But it was a huge, huge carrot dangled, and it's a shame that he didn't get there.
I mean, we had Shane O'Grady on last week, who's Max's coach. And look, obviously, this is a guy of phenomenal talent. And the way Shane portrayed it, as a guy who is ferociously hardworking and dedicated to his craft. Still, notwithstanding, as both of you are all too familiar with, golf can be a very, very cruel, cruel game. He tripled the third, had a bogey at five, and then again at eight. Oh, he developed a bit of a pulse at nine with a birdie, but then more drop shots in the back. So he kind of finished outside the top 10. So he just, that was it. Is that something that would cross your radar, John, at all? This LIV qualifying event?
Oh, definitely. Well, not so much. I mean, you're right. I mean, it wouldn't be something that I would pay a huge amount of attention to, but I paid more than I would have done had Anthony Kim not been one of the three.
And he picked the third spot. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the interesting one for me. I mean, you know, he disappeared for what was more than a decade.
12
nobody
years,
knew where
yeah.
he was. Yeah, and he was he looked like this guy was going to be great, truly great. You know, the real definition of great before he disappeared, and he's not been anything close to that since he came back. I mean, he struggled away on the LIV. I'm not sure. I haven't studied it, but I don't think he's really even contended to win a LIV event. But there he is. He's back on there. He's getting better again. I mean, this is a step up for him to be able to do that. He's not the story that he was, hence the fact that he was even at the qualifying event. But still, that he was the one that interested me just because of who he is and what he's done. And I remember him at the Ryder Cup in Detroit, I think it was, where he destroyed Sergio Garcia.
Valhalla, yeah, he destroyed him.
It wasn't Detroit. Yeah, you're right. But yeah, I mean, he was a brilliant player, and he was great fun to watch, and he had a personality. I mean, he shot a round at Augusta. They did have something like 11 birdies in the one round at Augusta, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the signs were amazing, and then he just disappeared.
So the three spots, Anthony Kim third, and then it was won by Richard T. Lee, who was at 11 under, and then Bjorn Helgren was at six, Anthony Kim at five. Gary, I mean, look, you know, it kind of turns LIV qualifying into like Squid Game, doesn't it? A bit like it just feels, but it's almost designed to produce drama rather than. You know, I'm not going to say fairness because look, it is what it is. Those are the rules. Everyone goes out there. So
the only thing about qualifying schools, and this was a humbling moment for me. I got my card 1 year. I finished third at Q school, and my caddy, who was a veteran on the tour at the time, said to me, "That's the easy part done because you're playing against all the guys that can't get out on tour." So there's always, you know, whilst it's brilliant to get through tour school. And even for Kim, he was one of the worst players on LIV last year. So, and as we know, there's a lot of very, very good players on LIV. So does this mean he's going to get out there and win and start competing? I'm not quite sure. But it's a good story, you know, because as John was saying, he was a phenomenal talent back in the day and obviously fell off the rails and looks like he got a job with Odlums, but he seems to be back keen to play golf again.
All joke, I mean, in fairness to him, this is a guy who had a now fairly public battle with drugs and alcohol. I mean, he definitely looked like he was all the worse for wear from a particularly long car crash. But look, you know, from a human perspective, it's great to see him competing again.
That's great.
You know, look, and as John, as you said, like once upon a time, this was a top 10 player in the world. Like there was future.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, this is a guy who's going to be a proper star. And just anyway, speaking of future stars, Gary in Turkey, tell me, give me the lay of the land there.
So it starts Saturday, four rounds, 116 guys for four spots. So percentage-wise, it's a big ask. But I've come over a bit early because of the weather at home and I was obviously injured over Christmas and sick, so I didn't really get a huge amount of practice in. So two different golf courses, we're playing Gloria Golf, which is a fantastic, two fantastic courses. The old course is a lot tougher than the new, and we're playing one round there and then three on the other. The weather's a bit chilly. Okay. So yeah,
you're going to get no sympathy here.
No, it's actually like it's 5-6 degrees in the morning, but it kind of warms up to 14 or 15 in the afternoon. But it's clear blue skies, but it's a bit cold. So just talking specifically golf, these courses are kind of designed for warm weather. So, you know, it'll be challenging, and I'm looking forward to it. So
yeah. How's the game?
Give it a shot and try my best. Yeah, I've done nice bits of work when I've had a chance. So it feels like there's something in there. It's just trying to, done a lot more work on my putting. So I think if generally I hit the ball pretty decent, if I can have a good week on the greens, I'll definitely be there or thereabouts.
All right. Okay. Lads, we're going to leave it there. Gary, play well, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for your fortunes this week. John, as always, a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us. Shane Ryan is going to be back on Friday with the Ryan Line. If you have questions for Shane, you can email them at golfweekly@offtheball.com, or you can just put them into the Discord channel. Lads, thanks very much. Talk to you again.
Thanks, guys.
Best of luck, Gary.
Thank you very much.
Starter kit right here.